Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all sorts of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. We're going to do something a little bit different today, but before we do that, first, as always, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means for our new listeners. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence in your body between anatomy and physiology, or in other words, the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine because we work with our hands. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but it will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but is not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as things like chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussion syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many other health issues. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what is happening, as well as to offer solutions and guidance for helping yourself to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with the patients in our practice. And also, before we get started on today's topic, let me just remind you that you can listen to all of the prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the shows on back pain, nutrition, climate change, carpal tunnel syndrome, concussion, and allergies, by going to Robinhood Radio's website, then to the on-demand section, then scroll all the way down and select the Your Health shows. Then you can click on the individual show by topic. The magic of on-demand radio, one of the few advantages of the 21st century. Okay, so as promised, we're going to do something a little bit different today. And we're going to talk about the importance of nature and the natural world to our health and longevity as humans. And by that, I don't mean only the sense of well-being and calm and beauty and enjoyment that we get from nature in the natural world, although that is certainly part of it and very important. But instead, I'm going to talk about direct and rather astonishing physiological and biochemical impacts shown by controlled clinical research that has been mounting up over the last few years, demonstrating the direct importance of exposure to nature in the natural world to our physiology and health. It's quite remarkable, and it's of particular interest to traditional osteopathic physicians like myself. Why is that the case? Well, keep listening, and we'll answer that question along the way. But meanwhile, let's get started on this really interesting and unusual topic. We all know how great it feels to get outside into the natural world, especially this time of year, right? And we're so fortunate here in our area to be able to do that relatively easily. A swim in the lake, a hike in the hills, a day working in farms or gardens, a climb up the falls, a quiet hour spent bird watching. All of these things are easy for us to achieve in our area. They keep us close to nature and all the beauty and diversity that brings, even if it's done while we're working hard. The presence of fresh air, open sky, birdsong, trees, the smells of soil and vegetation, they all impact our senses and state of mind and well-being in obvious and not so obvious ways that directly benefit our health. It's logical, of course, that that would be the case, as we are, after all, creatures by origin out of the natural world. But we rarely realize exactly how much we truly need regular contact with nature to stay healthy, and not only for the sake of outdoor exercise, although that is always a great thing. There's been extensive clinical research over many years recently demonstrating beneficial effects on human health of interaction with nature and green spaces like parks, showing health benefits such as boost to the immune system, lowering blood pressure, reducing stress, improving mood, increasing ability to focus, even in kids with ADHD, accelerated recovery from surgery or illness, increased energy levels, improved sleep, and associations with increased longevity and associations with improved health longer in life. Here are some really more specific examples to tell you what I'm talking about. There's been a series of studies done on the direct effect of walking in a forest on the function of the immune system. These studies were done in Japan, and they've received a great deal of attention recently and are quite fascinating. This is based on the practice there of so-called forest bathing, which is a translation of the Japanese word shinrin-yoku. And there, this is a short, leisurely visit to a forest, about a half an hour to an hour. It's regarded as being similar to natural aromatherapy, but it turns out that it achieves a great deal of direct physiological effect on human immune function and not just a good aroma. An excellent review of these studies demonstrating direct improvement in human immune function after merely a half an hour walk in the woods was published in 2010 by Qing Li in a journal called Environmental Health and Preventative Medicine. It's a very diligent refereed journal article showing the collective results of a number of studies. And it's called The Effect of Forest Bathing Trips on Human Immune Function, logically enough. This review focuses on the effects of forest bathing trips on human immune function. Beginning in 2005, adult Japanese individuals, both male and female, participated in a series of studies aimed at investigating the effect of forest bathing trips on human immune function. The subjects experienced a 3-day and 2-night trip to forest areas. Their blood and urine were sampled on days 2 and days 3, and on days 7 and on days 30 after the trips. The activity of specific immune cells was measured in their blood by looking at the numbers of natural killer cells and their activity, as well as a number of types of other white blood cells and other indicators of their activity in the blood. And these are all immune function related cells that are indicative of immune activity. They also looked at the concentration of urinary adrenaline as a stress measure. The same measurements were made before the trips on a normal working day as a control. The mean values of immune cell number and activity on forest bathing days were significantly higher than those on the control days, whereas the mean values of the concentration of urinary adrenaline on forest bathing days were significantly lower than that on the control days in both male and female subjects, meaning that the forest bathing increased immune function and decreased stress, directly. The increased natural killer cell activity lasted for more than 30 days after the trip, suggesting that a forest bathing trip once a month would enable individuals to maintain a higher level of immune activity. In contrast, a visit to the city as a tourist did not increase natural killer cell activity or the other indicators of immune function. These findings indicate that forest bathing trips resulted in an increase in natural killer cell activity, i.e. increased immune activity, and decreased urinary adrenaline, i.e. decreased stress. Wow, that's amazing. Of course, we intuitively know that it's good for us to go for a walk in the woods, but how could this happen? Well, subsequent studies have found that volatile terpenoid-like compounds produced by the trees and emitted through the stomata in the leaves actually stimulated natural killer cell development in cell cultures directly. An amazing and very specific effect. Okay, so that's one example. But now let's take a step back and look at a much bigger picture. In a 2009 study called Morbidity is Related to a Green Living Environment and published by a whole series of authors in the Journal of Epidemiological Community Health, another very important and diligent refereed journal paper. This study used large-scale representative medical record data to investigate whether the prevalence of a number of disease clusters was related to the amount of green space in people's living environment. The annual prevalence rates for 15 of the 24 investigated disease clusters was lower in living environments with more green space in a 1 kilometer radius around people's homes. The disease clusters included things like cardiovascular, respiratory, neurological, musculoskeletal, psychological, and some endocrinological diseases like diabetes. So it really covered all the bases. Interestingly, the relationship was particularly strong for children and lower socioeconomic groups who presumably had less ability to drive or otherwise travel regularly to green spaces further away from their homes and were more dependent on being able to walk to them. There's been a great deal of work on the effect of nature exposure on children. There are some who feel that many modern children growing up in urban and suburban environments are suffering from something called nature deficit disorder, leading to cognitive, attention, allergic, and autoimmune issues. This is a huge topic in and of itself, so we'll save some of this for future shows. But just as one example of the kind of work that supports this concept is one study from a 2009 paper from the Journal of Attention Disorders. And in this study, each participant experienced each of 3 treatments, which were 3 different environments. Children 7 to 12 years old, professionally diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, experienced each of the 3 environments. They were a city park and 2 other well-kept urban settings. And they did this via individually guided 20-minute walks. The environments were experienced 1 week apart with randomized assignment to the treatment order, so that didn't influence the results. After each walk, concentration was measured in the kids, and results showed that children with ADHD concentrated better after the walk in the park than after the downtown walk or the neighborhood walk, and comparable to those reported for recent formulations of a drug used for treating ADHD. Interesting, eh? The conclusion was that 20 minutes in a park setting was sufficient to elevate attention performance relative to the same amount of time in other settings. These findings indicate that environments can enhance attention, not only in the general population, but also in kids with ADHD. And in fact, doses of nature might serve as a safe, inexpensive, widely accessible new tool in the toolkit for managing ADHD symptoms. Well, wouldn't that be great? Another example of work with children looked at green spaces and cognitive development in primary school kids. This was published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences just this year. Green spaces have a range of health benefits, but little is known in relation to cognitive development in children. So this study, based on comprehensive characterization of outdoor surrounding greenness at home, at school and during any commuting, and repeated computerized cognitive tests in school children found a significant improvement in cognitive development associated with surrounding greenness, particularly with greenness at schools. This association was partly due to reductions in air pollutions, but not wholly due to that, and the effects were not primarily due to reduced pollution, but rather to the green spaces themselves. So the green spaces actually were associated with improved cognitive development in kids, independent of all these other factors. Pretty fascinating. And again, very logical, given the kind of sensorial stimulation that nature provides kids. So much more multidimensional, complex in scope, and engaging in creativity and problem solving than computer screens and computer games could ever possibly be. All right, let's get back to adults for a bit now. We are all aware of the current epidemic in diabetes and other neuroendocrine diseases in our modern world. Last year, a fascinating study was published in BMJ Open called The Association Between Neighborhood Green Space and Type 2 Diabetes in a Large Cross-Sectional Study. The study found that increased neighborhood green space was associated with significantly lower levels of type 2 diabetes in the populations. Type 2 diabetes decreased with statistical significance with increasing quartiles of neighborhood green space. And this is after adjusting for ethnicity, age, sex, social deprivation, and urban-rural status. The association remained strong on even further adjustment for body mass index, physical activity, fasting glucose, and cholesterol levels, all potential indicators of diabetes-type physiology. Neighborhood green space was inversely associated with type 2 diabetes, highlighting a potential area for targeted screening as well as a possible public health area for diabetes prevention. And none of the risk factors that were considered appeared to explain this association, so that there was a direct response, a direct relationship between the amount of green space and the amount of diabetes in the population that could not be explained away by things like body mass index or physical activity. As our final example today, I want to leave us with an example that's near and dear to my heart, which is a study demonstrating that gardening promotes neuroendocrine and effective restoration from stress, published in the Journal of Health and Psychology in 2011. In this study, the stress-relieving effects of gardening were hypothesized and tested in a field experiment. 30 allotment gardeners performed a stressful task and were then randomly assigned to 30 minutes of outdoor gardening or indoor reading on their own allotment plot. Salivary cortisol levels, which is a stress measure, and self-reported mood were repeatedly measured. Gardening and reading each led to decreases in cortisol during the recovery period, but the decreases were significantly stronger in the gardening group. Positive mood was fully restored after gardening, but actually mood further deteriorated during reading. These findings provided experimental evidence that gardening outdoors in nature can promote relief from acute stress. Well, these are just a few of hundreds of controlled, diligent research studies demonstrating the importance of nature directly to human health throughout our lives. As residents of a region where nature herself still abounds with vitality and health, it behooves us to take advantage of our proximity to and relationship with the natural world for our own health. Perhaps this will also help us to realize why it also behooves us to tend to nature herself and ensure that the natural world remains healthy and vigorous around us in spite of all of our human activities. And oh yes, why are we especially interested in the natural world as traditional osteopathic physicians? Because the practice of traditional osteopathic medicine is founded on the principles of the natural world and how nature works. The founder of osteopathic medicine, Dr. Andrew Taylor Still, was a naturalist himself and drew much of his inspiration for his unique approach to the practice of medicine from nature directly. As traditional osteopathic physicians, we work with those principles within the human anatomy and physiology to help our patients heal and stay healthy. So I hope this brief dive into some of the literature demonstrating the importance of the relationship between humanity and nature directly to human health has piqued your interest in nature and health and osteopathic medicine, and perhaps will inspire you to explore that relationship yourself in the great outdoors, in your own gardens and farms, as well as in pursuit of your own health and well-being. And stay tuned, because we'll have some more shows on this topic as we go along. But meanwhile, I seem to have run out of time for today. Thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics or requests for specific references from today's show to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. Make sure to leave a reply email address if you do want references, and I'll get back to you with those details. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we are at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m. with evening hours Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. Meanwhile, I'll be looking forward to being with you next time, every other Friday at 12:30 and Sundays at 5:30. Take care of yourself, get outside in nature, enjoy your health, and thanks for listening.